HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 128, recorded live Thursday, September 4th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAV Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks object-oriented AJAX with Scott Cate.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm sitting here in Sydney, Australia at TechEd Australia. Myself and Scott Cate have just come and done two different TechEds. We were at TechEd New Zealand in Auckland just a couple of days ago, and now we're in TechEd Sydney. And tomorrow you're going to be finishing your last talk, Scott. You're going to be talking about object-oriented AJAX.
That's right.
I thought JavaScript was object-oriented already.
Yeah, so most people would probably think that actually exactly the opposite. There's truly no such thing as object-oriented AJAX. In fact, if you look at JavaScript in general, which obviously is where AJAX comes from, everything in JavaScript can be simplified to a hash table. Everything is name-value pair. So if you're looking at a JSON object, you have name-value pair. That value may be, you know, an array of other name-value pairs, but literally everything in JavaScript can be simplified to a hash table. So there's really no such thing as object-oriented AJAX. However, there's some icing on the cake that Microsoft AJAX library gives you object-oriented-like features that make it very easy for .NET developers to use technologies that they're used to on the server inside of JavaScript. Like, a perfect example is the event architecture. So if you've ever double-clicked on a button inside of Visual Studio and then went to your code behind page on ASP.NET, you've probably seen the signature is in C# is void object sender event args e. Well, it would be great if in JavaScript you could have that same style of signature. And so you have something called raise event, and you can raise an event. And when that happens, you get the sender and you get the event args. So my talk tomorrow is about object-oriented AJAX. And really what it's about is making the .NET developer skill set available to the JavaScript developer.
So how are events in this library different from the kind of events I'm used to, like DOM events and onload and things like that?
Well, they're not different. They're very similar. The events that I'm particularly talking about are the events that you have control over. So when people write JavaScript, typically they're going back to like the 1980 or the 1990 very sloppy kind of spaghetti code JavaScript, where I just have this one thing that I want to change the background color of an item to red, mm-hmm. and I'll use JavaScript for that. Or I have some data that I've gotten back from a service call from Microsoft AJAX because I use this really cool script manager, and now I'll go through a set of four loops. And then I'll draw out a table or something specific. But typically the JavaScript is very, as I mentioned, spaghetti code. And when you start putting objects together, then you can expose events off of those objects. And, you know, then you start to build a framework inside of JavaScript instead of just spaghetti code of doing one little firework piece of code.
Okay, so what is this prototype everyone always talks about? They say JavaScript and the prototype. I know that there's a library called prototype. Is there some kind of an object called prototype or a property that allows us to do objects in JavaScript?
Yeah, that there's definitely some confusion there. So prototype is a keyword in JavaScript, and it gives you the ability to append a method to an already existing object. So if you have an object that's given to you by somebody else, you can prototype that object and then add functionality to it. So in a comparison to the server world, prototype might be what you know on the server with an extension method. So it's a type that already exists. Somebody else wrote it, so you're not in charge of it, but it's handed to you. And mm-hmm. you say, hey, I would really like that object to do my thing. And then so that's what the whole prototype is all about.
Now, did they write those objects as prototypes as well? I mean, if I was going to start from scratch and make a person object, I mean, you said that it's not object-oriented.
Right. So typically what would happen is, remember, everything goes back to being a simple name-value pair. So your person object would probably immediately have something synonymous with properties. So you'd have first name, last name, street address, city, state, zip. Mm-hmm. Those would probably just be defined as person.first name, person.last name, mm-hmm. and the methods would be prototyped onto person. So if you had something like age, or so you would say person.getAge, which would do a calculation on birthday.
Maybe it would lie about their age or something like that.
Yeah, or do some sort of work.
Right.
Then you would typically prototype that onto the original object.
So in a standard object-oriented language, we're familiar with declarations. You know, I declare that there is a thing called person, and I declare that it looks like this.
Right.
But in JavaScript, there's not any declarations. There's simply code that is executing. So I'm going not to declare that there is anything, right. but I'm going to create an empty object, an object that knows nothing about anything, and then start spot welding onto it.
That's correct.
Methods. And then at the end, I have the equivalent of, you know, an object kind of.
That's right.
In air quotes, I have an object. And then I can start calling methods and using properties.
Yep.
But it's a simulacrum. It's not really.
And you hope that they're there. Mm-hmm. And you may know that they're there either because you wrote them or from past experience mm-hmm. or you found out through a debugger. But another thing you don't have from a true object-oriented language is encapsulation. So if you think about a private member mm-hmm. and a public property or a property with a backing field, with JavaScript, because everything does truly get simplified down to a hash table, you cannot really hide anything from anybody. So let's say that I have, on the server in C#, I could have a person class with a birthday field, and mm-hmm. maybe the birthday is sent in as the constructor. Mm-hmm. And then I could have a public age property that was calculated from the birthday.
Right.
There's nothing stopping anyone from JavaScript to actually inspecting that person class to say, hey, what's this birthday field? Let's set that to 1801. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden you're 200 years old, which violates your business logic. So the only encapsulation is by a pattern. And so typically the private properties in JavaScript are going to be prefaced with an underscore. And the what we'll call public properties will be prefaced with a get and set accessor.
So that means that JavaScript isn't object-oriented, but if we all pretend that it is and come up with some conventions, then we can all lie to each other and we get the benefits of an object-oriented language, but it's not really.
In a sense, that's correct. I don't really like the term pretend because it kind of makes it like it's child's play. But really, I think at the end of the day, what's happening with any library is trying to make your life easier. And the library is saying, you already know how to do something one way, mm-hmm. and it would be great if you had the ability to continue using the knowledge base that you already have.
Okay. So this is object orientation via convention rather than via mandate.
That's correct. But it's also giving me ability to do things and enforce rules that I otherwise wouldn't have. For example, implementing an interface. And when I throw that out, people go, oh, whoa, that's weird. You can't implement an interface in JavaScript. First of all, there's no such thing as an interface in JavaScript. So, I mean, how can you even implement something that doesn't there or something that doesn't exist? So what the Microsoft ASP.NET Ajax framework does is it does in fact give you a type of interface. Mm-hmm. And when you define an interface, just like on the server, you're only defining the contract. You're not defining any sort of implementation. Mm-hmm. And then when you register a class, you have the ability to define how that class is being inherited from, so what its parent is, mm-hmm. as well as the interfaces that it implements. And when that class gets registered, the Ajax library goes through and confirms that in fact you have added all the methods to that class that are required by that interface. And if you haven't, it'll throw an exception for you. And then, you know, even that may raise some eyebrows and say, well, what does that mean? Throw an exception. You're still in JavaScript. And it just means that it literally will throw an error and either give you a dialog or depending on how you're handling that error. So again, how we started the conversation, the idea of the Microsoft ASP.NET Ajax library is to just take something that you already know and give you the ability to go with that in JavaScript.
Now, the term Microsoft Ajax has been kind of, from a marketing perspective, kind of unfortunately overloaded because there's the Ajax control toolkit, which gives us accordion controls and calendars and stuff.
Right.
Then there's the MS Ajax server-side kind of experience, dragging controls onto the...
The update panel magic.
Yeah, update panel and the script manager.
Right.
But then there's this MS Ajax client library, which I think a lot of people don't realize. It's just... another JavaScript that you could take if you wanted to be a PHP programmer who used MS Ajax client. It's just out there.
Right.
It's a source.
So there's a lot of libraries, right? You mentioned one prototype. There's also jQuery, and now we have this MS Ajax. And there are a couple of different pieces. So just giving everybody kind of a 30-second tour of what's available. First, you have a script manager, which is the ultimate requirement. Script manager is in charge of delivering all scripts that are required by the framework.
So script manager, though, are you giving us this tour from the point of view of an ASP.NET programmer?
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
So we should refer to make sure that we're talking about server-side controls versus actual files. Because I'd also like to know whether someone can use MS Ajax from Ruby or from whatever.
Okay, so I'll further define the definition of those controls and where they live. So starting on the server as an ASP.NET developer, you have an ASP colon script manager control. And the script manager control really only has one goal in life, and that is to deliver the appropriate scripts to the person who's requesting your page, which ultimately ends up being either the browser or your smartphone. And it delivers the right type of script. So it knows whether you're in debug mode or whether you're in runtime. It also does some really smart things with being able to combine those scripts together. There are people out there who have written minification scripts. They have the, you know, its general goal is to get scripts to the client.
Mm-hmm.
And just in closing, those scripts both control your scripts as well as the framework scripts. And so when we talk about the framework scripts, we're actually talking about the client-side library. And the client-side library is going to be responsible for all the communication that happens between the client and the server. So that's where the asynchronous calls happen.
Okay.
So, for example, you cannot have any update panel functionality without the script manager because those scripts cannot be delivered to the page. Now, going back to your question earlier, can you use these scripts inside of another library? Yeah, and the answer is absolutely. Because once you get down to the client... now you're pure JavaScript, and once you're on the client, it doesn't matter what language you're using on the server, you can very easily include these scripts. And inside the scripts, you have all of the object-oriented goodness that I'm talking about, as well as a huge array of pre-built objects that are beneficial for you. So you have something like sys.webRequest and sys.string and sys.stringBuilder and a bunch of other objects that are just built and kind of handed over to you.
So this client library, I can use it in MVC. I wouldn't need necessarily a script manager. I just have to figure out on my own what to deliver.
Yeah, so the client manager, it's JavaScript, right? It doesn't even know what a server is.
And this is something that's separately licensed. I understand you can download and you can go up on CodePlex and see.
So I think what you're referring to there might be the control toolkit.
I thought there's a separate place on CodePlex that you could get the client scripts and just download it as a zip file.
I know that there's been different places you can get it, but I'd have to defer to somebody else. I don't really know.
Well, the real question that I'm interested in is that I hear amongst kind of JavaScript, the JavaScript elite, the digerati, that, they kind of poo-poo MS Ajax. And I haven't spent a lot of time with MS Ajax, which is why I'm talking to you. I'm more of a jQuery guy. And so when I talk to the kind of the jQuery bigots or the Moo tools or the MochiKit bigots, they're like, there's nothing. MS Ajax, they got a string builder. That's all that is. But, you think it's actually very complementary to those other libraries.
It's a lot more than that. So, first, let's just pause on String Builder for a moment. For those people that are .NET developers, one of your favorite and probably most commonly used objects on the server is a String Builder. And it's very simply an object that will let you append multiple strings to each other. And then at the very end, you say, okay, give me everything I got, right? And then you just get this one giant long string. So something you'll commonly use inside of a for loop or, you know, pass it around. You don't know the end of this thing. You just know you're going to keep tacking stuff onto the end. Well, you can do something like that in JavaScript with an array. And many people have been doing it for years. And you'll see code like array square bracket array dot length square bracket equals. And that's basically popping something onto the end of an array. And then at the very end of after you've done all of this work, then you'll do something like array.join with no space. And that's basically a poor man's JavaScript string builder.
Okay.
Well, the Microsoft Ajax client-side library has something like that built in. And it allows you to do something like var sb equals new sys.stringbuilder. And then you can do a sb.append, which is a lot easier than the square bracket array.length, et cetera.
So it really behaves like a string builder that we're already used to, and it happens inside of...
And it has a toString method, so when you're done using it, you say sb.toString, and you get what you need.
Okay.
There's a bunch of methods on that toString, one of which is missing is append format. So I'm a big format guy. I like to do string.format, and you send in a mask, and then you can pass in an array of parameters after that. But the string builder doesn't have that. And so going back to what we talked about earlier with the prototype is you can easily append that method. I guess that's kind of a play on words.
Sure.
Append format with a prototype. So you can easily add that functionality. But getting into the jQuery things, I'm a fan of jQuery also. I can't say that I'm an expert at it, but I've gone through the tutorials online, and the jQuery has a lot of functionality, but I would say there's a definite differential between the Microsoft Ajax client-side library and jQuery, because jQuery is going to work with data that you already have downloaded. So I've got this DOM, and now I want to change all of my specific selected elements, whether those are p tags or h1s or h1s that are nested inside of other tags, you know, whatever your selector happens to be. Mm-hmm. And I want to massage the data after I've already received it from the server. But where Microsoft Ajax comes in really is to handle that communication layer for you back to the server. Mm-hmm. It handles the serialization of your objects. So it knows how to do web service. There's a JSON serializer and deserializer. And there may be a little bit of overlap there with jQuery, but typically Microsoft Ajax is going to be my my object-oriented JavaScript-style programming, if you will. And that's what my talk's on at the conferences, which we've really gotten a lot of good feedback on, because people just don't know that these types of services are available for you in Ajax.
Yeah.
But then jQuery is really going to be your select and modify. Select something from what you already have, and then make it easy to modify, which is phenomenal. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the tidiness of jQuery, and also the simplicity and the work that they've done with making those selectors very easy to use.
Yeah, the syntax is pretty extraordinary. It seems like those two libraries complement each other very well. I mean, the way that you described it is that you're selecting and modifying and manipulating your current document, but where's that new data coming from? It's coming back from MS Ajax.
Yeah, I think that they're very complementary as well. Mm-hmm. There's probably some overlap, and again, I'm not a jQuery expert, so I can't speak to it, where on the Microsoft Ajax side, I think I've probably stepped through just about every line of code in the library. That's the one phenomenal thing about Ajax or JavaScript specifically. You're not allowed to hide anything, right? Because even if you wanted to, I mean, at best you can obfuscate it, but I can still step through with a debugger like Visual Studio. I can see all the variable names. I know what they're doing. I know where they came from. In fact, that's how I learned the Ajax library when it first came out, was if you add a script manager to a page and then attach to the running process of your page inside of Visual Studio, if you look at the very bottom, you'll see something like a sys.pagerequestmanager.initialize.
Okay.
And if you set a breakpoint there,
yeah,
you can pretty much step through the whole framework. You can see how it gets initialized, and then you can add other breakpoints, and you just walk through the framework, right? They're, not only are they not allowed to not hide anything from you, it's impossible because there's no compilation, there's no hiding. I mean, if you want it to run, you have to give me the script, and once you give me the script, I'm allowed to look through it.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman with a word from our sponsor. Do you know how to build Web 2.0 AJAX applications with Web 1.0 components? You really can't. If you want to do the next generation web applications, you'll need next generation components, just like the ones that our friends at Telerik have got. They're RAD controls for ASP.NET AJAX. It's a huge pack of web controls built on top of ASP.NET AJAX that'll add previously impossible performance and interactivity to your next project. The new controls mirror the AJAX API from ASP.NET, so development is really straightforward. The client scripts are shared, so loading time is not a problem. If you just set a couple of properties, and you'll be able to automatically bind to web services for a really efficient operation. The new RAD editor from ASP.NET AJAX Telerik loads up to 4 times faster than before, and the new RAD grid handles thousands of records in just milliseconds. But as always, it's best to try for yourself. So you can visit telerik.com/ASP.NET AJAX and download a trial. Thanks a lot. Now, I've seen your product that you've got, EasyDB, and the interface is pretty extraordinary. I mean, it's a whole windowing environment, and there's constant communications back and forth. It's almost like, Microsoft Access in the browser. You know, it's kind of like the right. Gmail of database applications.
Sure.
What JavaScript libraries are you using to make that happen, to make that whole application happen?
So just a little clarification. The product is actually clouddb.com.
Okay,
CloudDB. And the reason you mentioned easydb.com is because our free public offering is an instance of clouddb.com that's running on EasyDB.
Okay.
So the product that we're actually selling is hosted on CloudDB.
Okay.
But the interface that you've seen is highly JavaScript enabled. It's very Web 3.0, if you will. I'm not going to coin a term or anything, but, no, it's pretty far ahead of its time, and there's a lot of windows that pop up, and, the communication layer there, again, here's a good differentiation between the different libraries that are at play. The communication layer is 100% Microsoft AJAX.
Okay.
So CloudDB is actually a service where you don't necessarily know the hardware that's behind it. All you have is an endpoint.
Okay.
And with Microsoft AJAX, we give you that endpoint in a JavaScript, as a JavaScript object.
Okay.
So using something simple like the script manager, you have total control over serializing that proxy down to JavaScript, and then you can simply say, clouddb.saveNewRecord, and you send that data back up.
So you had been saying sys.this and sys.that. That's Microsoft's kind of namespace that they've taken over.
Exactly.
And if I was going to go and write an ASP.NET MVC application, and I wanted to use a backing database,
mm-hmm.
I would go and get an instance of CloudDB.
Right.
I'd buy this from you, and you'd give me a JavaScript library
sure.
that would let me go clouddb.this and that.
CloudDB.HanselMinutes.com, and then you would code against that as your endpoint.
And then you're using MS AJAX underneath that for the communication.
Well, our UI, so remember AJAX is all about UI, right? So we're talking about two different things. One is
I'm thinking about
layer.
Me consuming a reusable library. I buy your product and I consume your library. You're using MS AJAX client library to talk back to your endpoint.
That's the option that we've chose to use for the EasyDB implementation, right?
Okay.
So if you go to beta.easydb.com, there's mm-hmm. some very AJAX-y web-style support,
okay.
and that's all happening. That communication layer is all happening back up to the cloud, which is a WCF service, which is rendered as an ASMX endpoint.
Okay.
So that's currently just we have two options for that. One is POX, right? Plain old XML. And that's if you point up to the ASMX and you get that mm-hmm. WSDL proxy coming back from Visual Studio. Or with the JavaScript, you just do the .asmx/js.
Right.
And then you get the JavaScript representation of that data.
So, oh, okay.
And we get that for free, right? Microsoft built that work for me. So we just utilize it and love it. It makes our job easy.
So I'm just trying to understand the layering here as far as could I write an, I could write an application and I could talk to your back end.
Absolutely.
And I'm hearing that there's the client-side proxy created by Asmx/JS.
Right.
There's sys.this and that from the MS Ajax client library.
I see the confusion.
Have you written an additional CloudDB specific library?
No.
Okay.
We're only using what we get for free out of Microsoft. So really what it boils down to is generating a proxy.
And that's what CloudDB.this and that is.
That's right. So if you were programming against CloudDB out of Visual Studio,
right,
you would just go right against the ASMX. You'd have strongly typed objects and you could say, you know, service S dot. So you'd be in C sharp.
Oh, okay.
If you were in JavaScript, mm-hmm. then you would program against CloudDB service 001.asmx/js. That would give you a JavaScript representation of the same proxy, mm-hmm. but you'd be in JavaScript.
Oh, okay. And then at that point, bring the data over and I could use string builders and build up HTML and stick it into whatever, or I could start using jQuery and start manipulating the DOM and take
Absolutely.
Things apart.
So we give you back a result. Actually, we give you back an outcome, and right off of the outcome is either a result and then also a succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a little bit of a pattern that we work with so that you always get back the same type of data, so you can inspect that outcome object if the succeeded is true or false, and mm-hmm. if it's false, then you have an error that you get back the reason why it was false. And but just to clarify, bringing this back into Microsoft Ajax, Microsoft Ajax is going to really do two things for us. First is the communication between the client and the server and doing all the object-oriented library stuff. So that's where sys.dot comes in.
Okay.
Like there's a sys.dot web request. Actually, I don't know if that's the complete name
of it. Maybe it's sys.net. Something.
Yeah, sys.net.webrequest. I think that's it. And then there's sys.stringbuilder and there's strings and there's that whole side.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a mini base class library in JavaScript.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't have a namespace collision. So instead of system.dot, it's just shortened to sys.dot.
Okay.
And then you have what you can do actually on the client, which compared to jQuery is very limited. You have some additional properties off of the base types in JavaScript. So earlier I mentioned a string.format. Well, there's a string type that's native in JavaScript, but there's not a format method off of it. So that's just prototyped onto the client. So there are some client helper methods, like you have a $get,
mm-hmm.
which will help you select items or select an item. I should clarify that, which, you know, on a scale of 1 to 100 for maturity, comparing jQuery to the Microsoft Ajax on the selectors, jQuery is probably at like a 95. And MS Ajax is probably at like a 5.
Okay.
So they're opposite ends of the spectrum there. And that's why they complement each other so well, because jQuery really lets you take control of the DOM and the data once it's on the client.
Mm-hmm.
And then the client library for Microsoft Ajax really gives you the ability to get that data back and forth between the client and the server.
Mm-hmm. So that the code that I'm writing in jQuery really isn't object-oriented. I'm just manipulating an object model. But as far as object orientation, like you mentioned at the beginning, we've got things like interfaces and exceptions and eventing is something that is provided by the MS Ajax client stuff.
That's right. And it's written with the same pattern and the same look and feel, if you will, of the source code that you would write on the server. So it's something you're very comfortable with. In fact, if you look at some of the documentation or some of the samples around Microsoft Ajax, you'll see that it has a server style feel. I mean, mm-hmm. even if anytime I see something with the object sender event args E,
mm-hmm.
that immediately brings me into the eventing architecture that I've kind of been molded into as a .NET developer over the last 8 or 9 years. And so when I see something like that in JavaScript, I already know how it works without having inspected it. And I think that's the goal. I mean, we've all been coding in .NET for a really long time, or a lot of us, at least the listeners on your show. And you already know how some things work. So if we can keep that familiarity in line with the work that now you're being forced to do on the client,
mm-hmm.
With some of the richer internet applications, that's going to mold with what you're doing with Silverlight. It's going to mold with what you're doing on the server. and, you know, you already know how this works, so let's try to give you that same same syntax along the way. And it's not identical, but it's very similar.
But it's the same vibe. It's bringing up common patterns, common idioms. Now, why do you think that MS Ajax gets a bad rap? Why do people dismiss MS Ajax? Is it the update panel that's holding us back, kind of as a...
You know, I think that the update panel really is a phenomenal control. And I do hear people say bad things about it, but I think that, you know...
Well, they say it's bloated, it's complicated, it's obscure, right. It's this, you know.
So here's the problem with a very popular radio show like yours, right? 99% of the people are going to agree with you, and then 1%, which may be the more vocal people, will say, oh, that's, you know, I think the people we hear poo-poo the update panel are the same guys who said, oh, you know, that Ajax 2.0 stuff, I've been doing that since 1999. Yeah, no. In fact, the XML HTTPA request object,
I don't know about that. I think
that's been there forever.
I would argue that the people who don't like the update panel have a strong sense of the aesthetic. And they feel that there's some purity and some terseness and some clarity.
There's one common complaint that comes back around the update panel, and that is in order to use it, you have to process a full page request on the backside. And that uses a little bit more server, and there's not more bandwidth used because you're not getting a full page request object back. You're only getting back the content that's relevant. As well as some additional meta content, like if the page title changes, if the view state changes. And, you know, to the common developer, which really is who the update panel is developed for. I mean, there's nothing that says you have to develop.
It's just people who
want to
get their job done and they, slap it in there.
It's a phenomenal control and it does some amazing things, right? In literally a matter of 30 seconds, you can Ajaxify the data grid.
You know, that was written by Alon Lipton, the lead developer on ASP.NET MVC.
I actually don't know who wrote the update panel, but I've been talking about it for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years now. And I've always said in every one of my talks, that person deserves a bigger raise.
That's the lead developer on MVC who works with Phil.
Here, hang on.
applause.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a phenomenal control because if you look at the business developer who is developing an application for their sales department and they've written a data grid. Data Grid has some phenomenal functionality to it, right? It's got automatic sorting, it's got paging, it's got all this thing, the inline edit, the update, the cancel. And if you can wrap an update panel around that that knows how to hijack the magical, mystical __ do post back, that is a phenomenal thing because it's backward compatible. The code that I've been working on for the last 3 years now magically works in this new web world by simply wrapping an update panel. And I agree that it's not perfect, but it's much better than making me spend another 2 weeks rewriting my application.
Right.
You know, this is just instant plug and play.
And this is the tension point between pure pragmatism and pure purity.
So I like the pure pragmatism and the guys that are really smart and they know what's going on and they have been doing it for a decade. There's no handcuffs on the update panel that says you have to use this or you will get fired.
Well, it's just one more control within the
I mean the
options.
The update panel by far is, I think, the most powerful control inside of the Ajax library.
Wow. I didn't know I was stumbling on this whole.
Yeah. I mean,
this is like a crusade of yours. I was just like, hey, why does the update panel get a bad rap? But you found like you've put some thought.
I'm an absolute defender of the update panel because it gives immediate gratification. And for 99% of the developers that I talk to and the people that I work with in user groups and conferences around the world, they go to work every day to get their job done. And if they can do something that just takes a couple of hours to upgrade an entire project that they've been working on forever, then I think that gives some immediate gratification. Now, that being said, there are always people who take advantage of it, right? So you can nest update panels. And imagine putting an update panel in a user control that was part of a data grid that gets rendered out to the page 500 times.
Right.
And then you have an update panel on your master page that updates all of those. I mean, that's obviously bad. And so I'm not saying that everyone uses it to its fullest potential. And there's danger with everything. But I still think the update panel is a is a phenomenal control. And the gentleman that you referenced earlier,
Elon Lipton,
still deserves a bigger raise.
I have no power over Elon, but I will tell the goo. I will tell the goo we should immediately promote Elon. Well, cool. Well, thanks so much, Scott, Kate, for sitting down with me to talk about Ajax here in Sydney.
We'll have to do it a little closer to home. You know, we only live probably, I don't know, 1,000 miles, maybe not even that far, 800 miles.
Yeah,
I'm in Arizona and you're
in Oregon.
Oregon. So, it's a shame we had to come literally halfway around the world to get together, but I'm anxious to do your show again. It's a good time.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot. And everyone be sure to check out easydb.com and clouddb.com. Check out some of the stuff that Scott's working on. And this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'll see you again next week.